I want to just take usually when I speak this parsha, I usually speak about Yom Kippur more than about the parsha, but I want to take a little change of pace over here and speak about Parshas Hazino and tie it into Yom Kippur as well. The very end of the parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu was about to leave the world, we're told. If you look over here in Perek Lamed Beis, I'm reading to you inside, Pasuk Mem Ches, it says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Be'etzem Yom Hazeh. More, Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu in the middle of the day, and he tells him, you're going to go to Har Havarim, to a place called Har Navo, in Eretz Moab, and you're going to see the land I'm going to give to Israel. You're going to die there. I'm going to gather you, just like Aaron died and was gathered to the nation. And Hashem goes on to explain why he's not going to live to see the entering of Israel into Eretz Israel. Now, the fact that it says, Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh, Rashi jumps on. Rashi points out, why does it say Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh? Which means literally smack in the middle of the day. Says Rashi, there are three occasions when Hashem uses this lashon of Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh, that Hashem is speaking to someone doing something in the middle of the day, broad daylight. And Rashi quotes all three by us. One of them, he says, is the story of Noach. When the flood happens, so the flood was brought Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh, right in front of everybody. The second time, Rashi says this phrase comes up, is by leaving Mitzrayim. We mentioned today in our Gemara, we walked out of Mitzrayim after Makkos Bechoros the next morning. And it happened not early in the morning. It was Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh. It was smack in the middle of the day. And finally, we have over here, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you are going to go up to the mountain and die Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh. Now, that's the three cases, says Rashi, but there's a theme behind all three cases. What's the theme? Says Rashi, the theme of all three is that all three of them, if it wasn't in broad daylight, the people in the story, the background people, would not have let it happen. At least they would have thought they wouldn't be able to let it happen. For example, says Rashi, in the story of Noah, let's say it started flooding in the middle of the night. The rain starts coming and the flood starts in the middle of the night. And the guy wakes up in his bed. He sees the water is right next to his you know, head level. He would have said, oh my gosh, we're about to die. Had I seen Noah getting onto his table, I never would have let him get on there. I would have taken my axe and I would have smashed his table to smithereens. I would never let him get on the table at all. So Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to bring the flood and Noah's escape smack in the middle of the day in front of all of your eyes. And whoever thinks they can stop me, go and see what you got. So when everyone's going to die, they're going to die knowing they couldn't stop the Kadosh Baruch Hu bringing the flood. That's the Noah story. We then have the story of the Mitzrim. That Hashem says, I'm going to bring B'nai Israel, your slaves, out of Mitzrayim, smack in the middle of the day. Why? So everybody, had it been in the middle of the night, you woke up in the morning and your slaves were all gone, you might have said to yourself, oh, had I known they were going to leave, I would have stood by the city gates with my sword and my spear in hand. I would have killed each person before he ever got out the city gates. So Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to do it in broad daylight. You're going to watch me do it. You think you can stop me, so try and stop me. And then we have over here in the third case as well, Moshe Rabbeinu. Had Moshe Rabbeinu been taken to the mountain privately, quietly, in the darkness of the night, maybe he would have said, had we known he was going, we wouldn't let him go. Moshe Rabbeinu did so much for us, we wouldn't let him go to the mountain, we wouldn't let him go. So Hashem says, I'm going to show you that you couldn't stop Moshe Rabbeinu from going up the mountain and dying on the mountain where he's going to die eventually. Those are the three cases Rashi quotes as the Etzem HaYom Hazeh, things that were brought middle of the day, broad daylight, so that every person witnessing what's about to happen will understand how Hashem runs the world and how Hashem makes these decisions, not us. Again, Noah with the flood, that everyone in that generation sees they couldn't have stopped it. Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim, that all the Mitzrim see, they couldn't stop us from leaving Mitzrayim. And finally, Moshe Rabbeinu leaving the world, that all the Jews notice, they couldn't stop Moshe Rabbeinu. When his time came, it came, you can't do anything about it. These three all do have their words, Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh in them, but to me, there's one of them that's completely different than the other two. One is so far off. It's not a list of three. The list of three things, they share a phrase. But one case is so different, it's shocking that Rashi would put them in one grouping. Which case seems so different and why? You guys tell me. Which case seems so different than the other two and why? And how is it different? What do you say, Ricky?
Moshe.
Yeah, why? How is it different? Give me two reasons.
Moshe. Well, it's different because the not being able to stop the hand of God in this case is a bad thing, not a good thing in our eyes.
Meaning what? What do you mean by that?
In the case in Egypt, we're saying God's on our team, and so we're stopping the other people from and proving them wrong, but God's on our team. Whereas in the case with Moshe, God's on the opposite team, sort of.
Excellent.
In that sense.
Meaning, what you're pointing out is that...
Meaning, in both, whether or not...
Listen, yeah. When, with God trying to prove himself to his, quote-unquote, enemies, so Hashem, obviously, he's got to show them they're wrong. But Bnei Yisrael, meaning, we know God exists already. We're gonna think we can stop God's master plan. God's been feeding us in the desert for 40 years, giving us food, giving us a cloud of glory. We have the audacity and the chutzpah to think we can stop God. I understand how every nature of the world that would not believe in God. The Mitzrayim didn't believe in God. I mean, they saw God's greatness, but they also had other gods they believed in. And certainly also, in Noach, they didn't believe in God. They thought Noach was a fool. So I understand that God has to, quote unquote, show his might to them. But we've been watching God perform miracles. You would think for a second you could stop God's hand. What does that even mean? Where's that coming from? Question number one. And question number two, at least the other claims would be valid claims, at least. Meaning most people, if you would take an axe and you would go to a person, to a teva, to a big boat, and you would start smashing the bottom of the axe, you could, in fact, do a job on it and make it not work in water. If you would go by the city gates with a sword in hand and your slave would walk by, you could, in fact, stab him and kill him and not let him go afterwards. It's a possibility you could conjure up in your mind. If it wasn't for God stopping you, you would have performed that action. But this third case is ridiculous. We can stop someone from dying. Everyone in the world dies. And we know Moshe is going to die also at some point in time. So we have a double question. Number one, we're going to challenge God. And our challenge to God, that God has to kind of say, but you can't, I'm going to prove to you, you can't stop me. So it means that we would have suggested, we would argue we could have stopped God. And the suggestion was that we would stop God from killing Moshe Rabbeinu, which is, by the way, so people die. It's what happens in the world. It's if people's time is up and they leave the world. It's ridiculous that we would think that we could stop that from happening. So those are two questions we have. Number one, Bnei Israel usually is on God's team, as Ricky pointed out. Now we're fighting against God. And now, I mean, God had to prove himself that we couldn't stop this from happening. That we would have, in theory, fought God on it. And what we were fighting God on was so impossible. The other things at least were possibilities. You can fight God on a boat, sailing. You can break the boat. You can fight God on someone leaving your town. You can kill the guy. But to stop someone from dying, you can't fight someone on that. People die. That's what happens in the world. There's no way to stop it when it happens. That's the question, two questions I want to ask in this comparison between Moshe Rabbeinu's case and the other two. Here's a thought I want to share with you. I think it's very important for the time we're right now, especially coming up off of Rosh Hashanah and heading to Yom Kippur. We are right now in a very serious time of year where we're going to be in shul for, again, even though nowadays in many places in the world, including in Israel, people are davening outdoors, not by you, I don't think, but by us, we're davening outdoors. And it's going to be a shorter davening than it usually is, but it's still going to be a long davening. And davening is very hard. It's very challenging to daven. But I want to stress to you right now, you have no idea the koach of your tefillah, and certainly not, don't understand what it means to be in Yerushalayim, Yer Kodesh, with the ability to daven as a yeshiva. It's true, the Jewish people, ironically, they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they could have said, we're not going to let you take Moshe Rabbeinu. A ludicrous thing to say. And they're also usually on God's team. So the answer is no. Only they could make such a claim. Only they could say to Hashem, we won't let Moshe Rabbeinu die. You know why? Because God gifted us with a koach of tefillah. He gave us a koach. We've seen already, what does tefillah do? Tefillah can make a rock give out water. Tefillah can make a bitter water sweet. Tefillah can take a snake bite that was poisonous and was had venom that would kill and make it be healed. Tefillah can do anything. We're not fighting God in this. We're taking the tools that God gave us. It says, HaKol Kol Yaakov V'Yedayim Yedei Esav. that Esav's might, meaning the non-Jews, their might is their brute strength. And that's why they would come with swords to kill their slaves leaving. That's why they would come with axes to break the teva. We don't claim such feats of strength. We claim hakol koyachal. We claim the ability to daven. We claim that we have the ability to connect to Hashem through our tefillah. And therefore, only the Jewish people could have the audacity and the chutzpah to claim that we will not let someone die. We will daven for that person's life. And that tefillah that we give will stop the person from dying. Only we can make such a crazy claim, and only because we completely believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can claim that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And therefore, we belong in this discussion as well. Hashem had to prove to us, in this case, Moshe has to leave. Even you can't stop me right now. Even with your koach ha-tefillah, which can usually stop things like death. Not right now. Now it's Yeshua's time to take over, and Moshe's time to leave the world. You are about to enter the second half of Metshuva, heading over to Yom Kippur. And you're going to have davening, and it's hard to daven so much. But I want to share with you a story I quoted to you earlier on. A Talmud of mine reached out to me from years ago and said, the story you told over at the night of Yom Kippur has gotten me to Yom Kippur from that point forward, and I'll share with you the story I tell over. But a little background information. In Eretz Yisrael, I'm not sure what happens this year to you guys, but in years past, the way it's been is that you're going to be davening, and when you get to the last Avinu Malkeinu, the last set in Ne'ilah, it's what it's been in years past, is that they say the whole thing responsibly. Usually when you guys are doing it, you know, when you do Avinu Malkeinu on a typical day, you say just, you know the middle five or six or seven, whatever it is, the middle few responsibly, the rest of it you say by yourself. But in Israel, what they do is they say the entire thing responsibly. The reason why they do that is because we do Birchas Kohanim during Ne'ilah in Israel on Yom Kippur, which means you have to do that before Shkia, before sunsets. Which means by Birchas Kohanim being before sunsets, that means you have a nice 25, 30, 40 minute time period before Yom Kippur actually ends. And we're basically finished with our tefillah. So we drag out Avinu Malkeinu. The first time it ever happened to me, I was like shocked. Because you know, you're davening and you're counting pages. Hopefully you shouldn't be, but we count pages sometimes. And we're like almost at the end. And we were like, we're giving our last, like, you know, our last parts of davening, and we see the pages ending, and we're finishing Shemona Esrei and Ne'ilah. And all of a sudden, the chaz will this. Avinu Malkeinu Chatzal Lufanecha. You're like looking around like, what? What? And you say that first one, because you're not sure how to react. Then he's the next guy, the chaz is afterwards. Avinu Malkeinu Ein Lanu Melech Ela Ata. And you're like, you've got to be kidding me. We're going to go through every Avinu Malkeinu responsibly. I remember the first year that it happened to me, I became completely deflated. It was about 18 years ago. I was davening in yeshiva. And when they broke out responsibly Avinu Malkeinu from beginning till the end, I like lost it. I didn't do anything. I just lost my tefillah. I couldn't focus in the end. I lost my stamina. I wasn't prepared for it. So number one, be aware it's going to happen. But while it's happening, I want to tell you one story to help you get through that time. I was it was one of my first years in Israel. I was probably 5, 6 years in Israel. And I moved, I mentioned before, I had twin boys. My boys at the time were probably 6 or 7 years old. And I was raised in my family, when you get punished, you get punished. You punish someone, you punish them. You got to stick to your guns. Baruch Hashem, my dad taught me that well. So my son, he was all seven years old. I don't know what he did, but I'm sure it wasn't anything too bad. But I punished him. I said, go up to your room right now and stay in your room. And he's like, oh, you know. He was sad, but he went to his room and he closed the door and he stayed in his room. After about 20 minutes, you know, it's late, it's dark a little bit. I hear him saying, Abba. And I'm like, ignore it, not listening. Abba, Abba. He's crying to me, Abba, please open the door. And I'm like, I'm not listening. I was raised at punishment to punishment. And after about 10 minutes of him screaming and crying, my wife says to me, Avi, enough already. Like, okay, you got the point. I said, no, maybe in your family, but not in my family. In my family, you punish someone, you got to stick to your guns, you got to punish them. Okay. About a half hour later, even I have a heart. My kid, a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid, poor kid, screaming in his room, Abba, Abba. So I say, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go upstairs. So I walk up the stairs. In my house back then, it was a different house than right now. We had 16 stairs, a flight of 8 and a flight of 8. And then I get to on the right side is his door. And he's screaming, Abba! Abba, please! Abba, please! Open the door, please! Abba! I get the first flight of stairs. Abba, come on! I'm so dark! I want to go downstairs with everyone else! Okay. Finally, I take the last step up the stairs. Abba! And I take one more step to put my hand on the doorknob by his room. And he stopped. He gave up. And I'm waiting. Just one more Abba, and I just turn the thing and open the door. One more. And I waited, and he gave up. And he stopped screaming. And he stopped crying. I did what every good parent would do at that point in time. Went back downstairs, left him in this room. I kept him punished. You're going to be saying Avinu Malkeinu. You're saying Abba. Avinu Malkeinu. And you're going to be saying it over and over again. And you're going to get very tired. And you're going to be looking at your watch and be like, I cannot believe I'm doing this for the next X amount of things. But you remember that every Avinu Malkeinu you say, Hashem takes one more step closer to you. And Hashem has his arm on the doorknob. And if you give up by the end, then he just leaves you where you are. Do not lose your koach. Do not lose your passion. Because if you bring it to the table, and when you get to the end, Hashem Hu Elokim, and Shema Yisrael, and you still are screaming all those words out with Kavana, looking at your friends, realizing that the sun is setting in Yerushalayim, Dera Kodesh, in your opportunity to daven during the Eidah right now, then anything you daven for is meant to be listened to. And we see that because our Rashi told us that you could daven for Moshe Rabbeinu not dying. And normally that would work. Only we have the chutzpah, a kol Yaakov. Only we have the koach to be able to daven like that. Do not lose your stamina. It's one day a year, and bring everything you've got, and you should end to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm spent. If you end like, oh, I could do that for another 5 hours, that means you didn't do a good enough job. They should have to wheel you out because you're so tired from davening. You should really be able to get up and drink after the fast is over because you give every last ounce of energy. That's Yom Kippur you're about to spend if you let it. I give you a bracha. You should have the ability to have the personal stamina. You should have the koach. You should be able to bring your A game. You should realize the opportunity you have right now will not come so soon again. In Yerushalayim, on Yom Kippur, with the Chevra, whatever you ask for, it could happen. Hashem should give you the koach, the ability to daven for everything that you want. And you should have the ability, the bina, the understanding of what to daven for. And we should ask tshuva and slicha. Just so you know, the back of your article to do, if you have one, the Machzor, they have a whole list of explanations. But each of the al-chetzar and each of the part of the vidui is the confession. If you don't have that, you should make sure you get your hands on that at some point in time to understand. Read it in advance. When you hit your heart, you'll be like, oh my gosh, that's me. Okay, that's me. Oh my gosh, that's me. You should understand what you're actually hitting your heart about. If you do a good job here, it should bind you closer than ever to Kadosh Baruch Hu. We should be zochad to have our tefillahs answered. The pandemic should go away. We should be able to be back again, teaching in person, and allowing ourselves to, Mr. Shem, to be able to see the country in all of its glory in a time very soon. Have a meaningful Shabbos. Hope to speak to all of you and maybe a voice note before the big Yom Hadin of Yom Kippur. Have a great day.